This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So Stephen was just saying how incredible this trip was, being out in tents in the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. And how was that for one of the few women on this trip?
I know, basically the only the only girl around. But it was quite an adventure, I have to say. I mean, the film itself is such an adventure. And on a personal level, we experienced so much. And like you said, traveling to so many countries and experiencing so many different cultures. And actually, for me, luckily, I was the only girl because I was able to have time off while the guys were fighting and running. And I was actually quite happy about that. I was able to explore. You know, in New Zealand, I went a few day trips. And in Namibia, I went on a couple safaris and went on day trips all the time. And I really got to experience the cultures, which was really fulfilling.
But it must have just been weird being the only female. I mean, just the whole bathroom stuff and everything was, you know.
That wasn't very clean, I tell you. But, hey, I have to say it was a lot more fun than having a bunch of girls for me personally. I've always had a lot of guy friends, so that it's more fun that way, right. I think. There's no jealousy involved. It's just camaraderie, really.
How did you feel with your contact lenses?
They're a little irritable, I have to say, just because they're really thick. And I wear contacts in normal life, so I thought it would be a similar feeling, but they were hand-painted, and they're like measured to my eyes. It was a very long process.
Okay.
And so from the inside, they were white, and I had no peripheral vision. I could only see directly in front of me, so I was constantly...
Wow.
I could hardly see, so I was constantly falling. And the guys,
wow,
you know, going up the mountains, New Zealand, or in the sand, they had to help me walk, because I would just fall flat on my face. So
wow.
It's kind of an ongoing joke about my clumsiness, but I was like, you try and wear the lens, and you'll see what it's like. You'll be a bigger baby than me.
When so. Did you... When the scenes with... you were on the horse, as a prisoner,
mm-hmm,
yourself?
Yeah, some of it was... Well, the fall was obviously a stunt lady. I couldn't have done that. It's definitely for a trained stunt woman.
And how was it to be held and
It was fun. It was fun. And Ben, the actor, he's a fantastic horseman. He's actually a trained horse rider, and he's done a lot of stunt work like that in France, where he's from. And so I could trust him, and he knew what he was doing, so I didn't feel... like I was in harm's way.
How was your physical training?
I actually didn't have a lot to do physically. It was more, for me, I obviously didn't have to go through the whole boot camp, and I kind of made fun of them every day having to do it. They hated me for that. But it was more about being fit, obviously, because we're traveling so much, and in working in such extraneous conditions, you had to be fit in order to, and also the whole sequence with the terror birds. That was 2 months of running every day, and I was involved in that. So that was really, it's obviously very physically demanding. So you have to be fit, but, and it was, for me, it was more about staying healthy and, you know, eating well, drinking a lot of water, and just being healthy, because if you're sick, there's no way you could do a movie like this. So knock on wood, I never got sick.
Was there any food that you missed from back home working on these sets?
Oh, in New Zealand, actually, it was fantastic. The food was amazing. It was so fresh, and it was incredible there. I think we all missed that food when we went on to Namibia. But it was, I think, just sometimes the fresh produce was hard to find, especially when we're in tented villages and whatnot. That was got a bit difficult, but we actually ended up bringing boxfuls of snacks from Cape Town and had kind of a storage of snacks when we were up there, so we didn't really miss much.
You're working in different type of movies. I mean, adventures, thrillers. How did you feel better in what kind of role?
I don't know. I kind of feel comfortable doing anything. For me, it's more about challenging myself in different ways. And I think the most exciting thing about this job is that you're able to try so many different genres. And that's what makes it so exciting, is playing different characters and trying different movies. Obviously, I've done more dramas than anything else, which I feel really comfortable doing because it's basically my background. But I'd love to try comedy, I'd love to try musical. That's what's fun about the job. It keeps it exciting if you try new things.
How fluent you are in those four languages? You can act in any of them?
I could if someone gave me a chance. I speak Portuguese and Spanish, so that's and English.
You will be able to.
Oh, definitely. I would run in a heartbeat. I would love that.
You have worked with very talented directors like Steven Spielberg in Lost World and Alfonso Cuarón in Little Princess.
Right.
So now with Roland Emmerich, what have you learned of all of them?
From Roland especially, it was just his attention to detail was fascinating. He would have four cameras rolling on every single scene. He would see the smallest detail. I mean, even if, you know, a plant was leaning the wrong way in the third camera, he would run up and do it himself. He was very hands-on and very dedicated to his job and very passionate about his job, which is really admirable. And he could he would handle it with really gracefully. He had so many things happening, snow and thousands of extras and 500 crew members. I mean, the list can go on about how many things he had to juggle, but he always did. And also with attention to the actors and talking to us between every single take and always open to any ideas and always very, made us feel very comfortable. So I think from him, that's it. It was really his attention to detail and the way he was able to manage everything was really admirable.
And what about Steven Spielberg and Cuarón?
Well, it's hard because I was so young.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying much attention to how they were directing.
Okay.
If I could work with them now, obviously I'd learn a lot. But when I was 6, I worked with Alfonso.
Okay.
And I think 9, I worked with Steven. So
okay.
It's a very long time ago. I would love to work with them again so I could pick up some tricks.
Okay.
Then it was just exciting and it was fun more than anything.
The Ballad of Jack and Rose, I know that was 3 years ago, but obviously Daniel Day-Lewis is the man of the moment right now with
right.
his Oscar. Can you just recall a few things about working with him? Because I know he's very method. Did you do the method acting thing with him?
Well, I don't think you can really put, you know, a brand or a name on the way he works. I think that'd be unfair to do that. But he it's definitely his own way of working. It's kind of the Daniel way of working. I don't think you can put a name on it.
So how was
but
that?
But it works for him. I think everyone has their own way of working. I think all of us that worked on the film picked up a lot from his focus and his dedication towards his role. And his preparation was just fascinating. He knew how the character would walk, talk, eat, the gestures, everything about that character that at the end of the day he didn't even have to act anymore. He really just is that person because of all the preparation he did beforehand. I think a lot of us took that with us. I mean, even Paul Dano got to work with him again. He's just getting better and better and better. And so I think we learned a lot about his preparation. I think that's something I took with me that now I try to prepare a lot more before a role that I hadn't done before because I didn't even really think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
it's such an intense relationship that you share. That must have been weird to have kept that up, you know, when the cameras weren't rolling.
Right. Well, sure, it was, but it was a fantastic set. It was a very intimate, very small set, so all of us felt really comfortable. We were able to do our best job, and really you are as good as your co-star. I mean, that's really the way it is. So all of us felt like we did our best job possible because we're working with the best actor out there. So you just hope to work with people like that so you can be as good as you can.
Would you be happy to be a little bit more like Raquel Welch in Million Years Before Christ?
That movie was really bad. I don't think so. That's a really bad movie. And it was just, we should bleach blonde, blown out hair. No, it's fine. I'm fine with Evelyn. I'm fine with the dirty nails. That's fine.
How was your preparation for Evelyn? Because I see there is there are a lot of contradictions on her that is very, a lot of strength, and at the same time it's like very sweet and, you know, waiting for being saved.
Someone's tape.
So how was that process, you know, in the preparation for this character?
I think with the character, it was more about talking about Roland, because actually in the original script, the character was quite non-existent. I mean, she really didn't do much. I mean, she was there, but she really had no personality, and that bothered me. Like, Roland, I don't think so. And so we got together, and I don't want to play a weak character. I never have, and I hope I never will. It's just not something I want to play. And so I talked to him, and this is something that obviously I owe a lot to him, because we had many talks and we got together and I was explaining my worries with the character, and he ended up rewriting a lot of scenes and rewriting the character for me to make her a strong character, make her dimensional, make her have, like with the scene with the warlord, with the sword, that was a new rewrite. And when she wants to run away with Delay at the beginning of the movie, that was a new rewrite. Just to make her have a personality, make her be a little bit feisty, not just you know, wailing and not doing anything. That's just not exciting for me. So he was able to fix that. So once that was in the script, that was the base, then I could kind of run away with it. And out of the everyday experiences, I really didn't have to act much, you know, wasn't really much preparation. It was kind of day to day. We really were cold. We really were trudging through the snow. We were mad. I'd be shackled to horses every day. It was kind of really a natural process. There wasn't much preparation we had to do until when it's on the page, it makes it so much easier.
You have, I believe you have a sci-fi movie coming up next. Is that right?
Well, I don't, I know, it's just sci-fi. I don't really know what makes it that sci-fi.
Okay, well, can you tell us about who's your character and what's the movie about?
It's, and that's why it's really difficult to describe this movie. All of us have the hardest time. But it's called Push, and we shot in Hong Kong for 3 months last year. And it's a very modern movie. It's very hard to describe what it's about. But all the characters have somewhat of an ability. It's not so much like superpowers, but everyone is more cerebral powers, like telekinesis, or someone else is telepathic. And it's like Dakota Fanning's character, she can predict the future. And Chris Evans' character, he's telekinetic. And my character and Jaimin's character, we can manipulate people's thoughts with our minds. And so it's more like that, and we're kind of on the run, but Jaimin's the baddie, and then we're kind of on the run from him and his government group in Hong Kong.
So is there, can you tell us a little bit more, like, I guess more of an overview of the film, like, more of what it's about besides just you on the run?
That's why I'm... it's very hard. It's so complicated. I mean, really, what happened, that they're kind of... Well, they're assuming that people... The government tested different drugs on people in the 70s and the 80s, and then as a result of that, they end up having these abilities, and so the government wants to kind of get rid of all these people with these abilities because they're kind of posing a threat to the government. So we're all on the run from them. They're trying to get, and we're the children of, they're kind of the second generation, which makes us even stronger. So they're kind of trying to wipe us out.
And you film the existence. Does the whole film take place in Hong Kong?
The whole thing takes place in Hong Kong. And there's a Chinese cast as well, and they speak Cantonese in the whole movie. And so we're there. We just wrapped in the end of December.
What was the experience like being in Hong Kong for 3 months?
Another adventure. But in a completely different way. Because Hong Kong's such a modern city, it was very different. But we're shooting a lot in the markets and local markets and outside night. And it was a really fascinating experience. I'd never been to Asia before, and I've always wanted to go. So that was really eye-opening for all of us, I think, to be there.
Could you tell us about your charity's work? I think you are in a group called Kids with a Cause.
I was, and I was when I was younger. Because the whole point of that was really like kids helping kids. So I did that. I stopped a few years ago, but I was really involved with them when I was kind of teenage, up to about teenager years. But
okay.
You worked with Cameron Diaz in The Invisible Circus, and I believe she was a bit of a kind of older sister figure to you of set. But were you able to do that with Dakota Fanning, or is she just so, you know, old school, even at her age, that it wasn't like that?
We really got along so well, and a lot of times I felt like the kid when we got together. It was just so bizarre. But actually, I ended up seeing a lot of myself in her, because in just in the sense of the fact that we've both grown up in the business, you know, we haven't really studied it. It's more through experience, through observation, and learning through that. And we really approach work in the same way. So we actually really bonded over that and talked a lot. And I mean, in a way, it was kind of, you know, older sister vibe, because just on a personal level. But with work, she's so professional and so talented. She doesn't really need much advice at all. She really knows what she's doing. So,
going back to 10,000 BC, was it kind of creepy for you, having been the object of lust for all these kind of older guys, all trying to grab hold of you?
Did that It was fun. No, but Ben, who played the warlord, he was fantastic. He hardly spoke English, which is kind of amusing. Wow. Everyone was just having quite a fun time with him, because he has a very thick French accent, and he only speaks French. He doesn't really speak much English. And one time they got a translator for him, but the translator didn't really speak French. It was this whole confusion. I'm like, why do you have a translator there? It was really confusing. But he was fantastic. I had such a great time with him. It was funny because, you know, Steven, my character, they're love interests, but we hardly shot together, which is really bizarre. So it was kind of as if we're shooting two completely different movies. And I was with Ben being shackled, and Steven was getting an army. And so kind of when we had dinner, all of us together kind of talk about our own movies that we were making.
So it never spoke this invented language, which is in the film, like enhanced kind of technically this semi-Arabic kind of strange language.
I didn't know. I mean, Brendan Gunn, the dialect coach, he invented those languages, which was just...
But see, in the film, we see when he speaks it, it's probably done technically. It's not real voice when Ben speaks.
His voice, you mean? His tone?
Tone.
I think they messed the tone a little bit. I mean, the language is real. That's
but
his
when,
voice.
When
so
the
I think
scene was acted, though.
He was speaking the language.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm curious. You said you just wrapped that movie in December. So do you have anything coming up? Are you filming anything in the next few months?
Not that I know of. I never know. That's kind of how I work. I make a movie and then I take time and live my life a little bit. And then I like to see. I never know what I'm doing when I'm filming. I never work back to back. So probably the next couple of months I'll know.
4 minutes a week.
And I have another. I want to do a follow up on Push. I have just one more question. Is it real? Do the characters do real world stuff? Like, do they make decisions that, you know, real people would do, you know, like use their powers for advantage, or is it sort of, you know, I guess I'm just curious about the tone.
You're making this really hard on me.
This is what I do. You don't have to answer. I was just curious.
I'm trying to. I think. Well, what do you mean? That they make decisions like we would make decisions?
Yeah. Like, or? Do they use your power for gain? They. I'm just curious.
Sure. No. Definitely. And also, it's more for. They don't really use their powers that much until they encounter Jaimin's group, because that's when they really need to use it. On a daily basis, they're not really using it that much.
That's
does
okay.
That answer your
yeah,
questions?
Totally.
Okay.
I was
sorry.
I've heard that you wanted to be a classical pianist, so that's still in your plans?
No.
Not anymore? Or
I
never,
still play,
or?
But I've never been, you know, an aspiring pianist. Oh, okay. I've played my whole life, but I was practicing quite often from 5 to 15. That's when I played a lot. And then I kind of, now I know I can pick up music and play. That's all I want to be able to do with piano, and I can. So I still play in my own life, but
okay.
I'm not aspiring to be. This
you
is my job.
You also have a second career as a model. Have you ever wanted to kind of push that further and do more and do the whole Paris catwalk thing?
Well, I've never been a model. It's never been a career. It's kind of just...
It's more for the print campaign.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've done two of them. When I started at 9 months, that's what I did. It was modeling and commercials and whatnot. But then once I started doing films, I stopped. And so it's never been a career. It's just kind of happened with the Mimu campaign. I mean, obviously, it's fun. It's an honor to represent a company like Mimu, but it's not a job. I'm not going to be walking on a catwalk any day soon.
Have you ever turned down any of the modeling fashion-y sort of things?
Definitely. Oh, yeah. Because I also, it's a kind of thing, if you're going to represent a company, I really think you have to choose carefully, and you have to choose a company or a fashion line that you would wear in your personal life, or that you feel that represents your personality, or then you can really wear out your image, and then what's the point of representing a company? Mm-hmm. You know, and something like Miu Miu I wear all the time, and it is almost like my personality as well, and I felt really, I loved it, and it was a fantastic campaign with the Vera Wang thing as well. It represented itself in a very original way, and it does represent a personality in a certain sense. So I think I've definitely turned them down, because I'm not going to go and do something that isn't me, you know.
What female role models do you have?
This
is the last one. It's okay.
In the business?
Yeah.
I mean, since I've started, I think since I was 2 years old or so, I've loved Elizabeth Taylor. She's been my idol my whole life, and I adore her. So that's been my life idol. But now I love, like, Kate Blanchett and Kate Winslet are my favorite actresses. They've been for a while now, so...
Fantastic. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving me a hard time.